Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. We're talking about women in business in the Sunshine Economy. You know, talking about gender and economics can be risky. Ideally, we all want to succeed or fail on merit, don't we? But the data and the experience of most show that's certainly not always the case. There's all the gaps that exist. There's the wage gap between the sexes. Nationwide, women earn about 82 cents for every dollar earned by men. There are challenges over the opportunity gap. A female venture capitalist sued her high-profile firm in Silicon Valley recently for not promoting her, claiming she was fired then when she complained. A jury, though, found the firm did nothing illegal. There's also the leadership gap. A University of Michigan professor recently calculated there are fewer women leaders of large companies than there are big company CEOs named John. Coming up over the next hour, we will talk about new research on women-led businesses in Florida. In a nutshell, they're usually run by women who founded those companies. They're growing, and they are hiring. But first, the Miami Herald's business editor, Jane Wooldridge, introduces us to two business leaders who happen to be women helping shape the Sunshine Economy.
Christine Duffy recently took the helm of Carnival Cruise Line. She is the first woman to hold the position. In most companies, C-suite jobs go to executives who have worked their way up the corporate ladder. But Duffy has taken a different route, starting her career as a travel agent. Christine, tell us about your career path.
Well, as you said, I started out as a travel agent in my early 20s after I was unable to get a position as a Pan Am international flight attendant because I wasn't tall enough. I had the privilege growing up. My mother is from France and spent a lot of time in Europe and always knew that I wanted to be in the travel business and to travel the world. So the next best thing when I couldn't fly was to get a job as a travel agent, which I did in Philadelphia.
When you first came out of your working, it came into your working life, what was the business climate like for women in leadership?
Well, I think it was a rarity with the exception of many family businesses where they had their daughters coming in to work, although it was particularly in HR roles or at the time what they called personnel. So the company that I worked with actually got into in the 80s, we were very much in the business of running corporate meetings and events. And so I was exposed to lots of bigger Fortune 500 companies in the pharmaceutical space, in financial services, in automotive. Most of the clients that I worked with directly were men. There were not many women, and those of us that were around back in the day dressed in the traditional, what I think people recognize as the IBM uniform, you know, the gray or navy suit with a white blouse and the burgundy tie.
Right. I remember those days. Was that the pinstripe trouser suit or the pinstripe skirt suit?
Yeah, it was almost like a school uniform, but you sort of saw, it was fascinating actually because we were running sales meetings and other big events and, you know, you'd gather, you know, 1,000 people and maybe there were 10 women.
What were those influences that made you believe in yourself?
You know, I have to say, while there were certainly some women leaders that were in the hospitality and travel industry at the time, most of those mentors that I had were men. And they were men who were either my customers that worked at some of these much larger corporations in pharma or financial services, or men that worked in the business. I never believed that my gender was going to hold me back, but that was primarily because, again, I think I was very lucky in the people that I worked with that believed in me and supported me and pushed me and encouraged me.
Were there other factors? Were these men who maybe saw in you the possibilities of their own daughters or sisters and wanted to, were more open perhaps to female leadership?
Well, I think lucky for me, I came into the business world and sort of started at the bottom in the 80s. And then as I sort of promote, you know, grew, I think the world was also starting to see that women were coming into the workforce in bigger numbers, that we did have a different way of leading and managing. And I think that you know, I actually started a women's leadership initiative in the industry back in the early 90s and went before the board of directors for a large association to explain why I felt that we needed an initiative to support and promote women. And I remember getting in front of the board, which was all men, and actually one of them said, why do we need an initiative like this? Most of the women in the travel industry, you know, it's full of women. Well, the reality is, yes, it's full of women, but very small percentages are running organizations or are in senior management. And it was actually the executive VP of Wyndham Hotels who said, you know what, I've got four daughters. And I want them to have an easier path. I want to make sure that they have the opportunity. And on the spot, they committed a significant amount of money at Wyndham, and then others followed.
I know when I was starting out early in my career, probably the same for you because we're contemporaries, it was more of a father knows best kind of paradigm where one was told what to do and one was expected to just plain do it. That's a shift as well. I'm not sure whether that's a general societal shift or maybe whether women have helped shape that part of the conversation.
Well, you know, I do have to say I remember having some experiences where, you know, someone would literally pat me on the head and say, don't worry your pretty head about that.
Ouch.
And I cringe, you know, that's probably one of the easier stories to share. But, you know, there were also experiences I had along the way that I would say were really inappropriate and would not at all be tolerated today. And so I think we have come a long way, and I do think now it has gone way beyond what women expect of their leaders and what women expect of what kind of business environment and company they want to be part of. I think this has become a gender-neutral issue where people expect, you know, and hold organizations and their leaders to a certain standard that aligns with their values as people.
You've only been in that job a small amount of time, I think just about, less than 60 days now.
Yeah.
You are the first woman in that position. Have you encountered any obstacles that feel like they may be related to the fact that you're female, or are they just obstacles because you're new to a company?
You know, I have to say, I have not felt any obstacle to the fact that I'm a woman, and I've actually had the opposite from many of the women who work here at Carnival, that they are very excited because I'm a woman, and for them, you know, the idea that there is a president of Carnival Cruise Line that is a woman who was a mom, who, you know, grew up in the industry, I think makes me very relatable to a lot of our people, and I've been welcomed with open arms from the organization. It's really been a great, great onboarding experience.
What is the advice that you give to young women today in the workplace?
Well, I think for a lot of young women that I talk to, they all, you know, want to know how to, you know, what's the path to get to be the president? And I think the important, what I say is everybody has their own journey. If someone would have told me when I didn't get that Pan Am job and I started as a travel agent that one day I would be the president of Carnival, that was not, you know, I think today, especially today, there's a lot of pressure on women especially, but I think men too, coming out of school is, you know, what is this linear path that's going to get me to the big job?
Christine, thanks so much. We've been talking with Christine Duffy, president of Carnival Cruise Line. Dr. Jermaine Smith-Bow is president and CEO of the Urban League of Broward County, a not-for-profit with an $11 million budget aimed at helping African-Americans and other minorities in the areas of education, jobs, health, and housing. In the world of not-for-profits, women CEOs are a little bit more common than they are in the corporate world, but not by much. Do you think, Jermaine, that it makes a difference that women are leaders in not-for-profit versus having men as leaders in not-for-profit?
I do believe that the female perspective does influence in a positive way the way in which we deploy the resources that we have.
Now, let's talk about what those differences are, because mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of buzz around the concept of female leadership being somewhat different from male leadership. What are those differences?
In the state of Florida, we have 7 Urban League affiliates, and I am the only woman in the state of Florida. And I find that when I am in the room with my colleagues, that my perspective, at least the ability to really try to see the middle ground, is very different. They tend to want to go sometimes to their respective corners. Not necessarily to fight, but just to their respective corners. And I find myself more in the middle of the ring. So I think that that definitely is one of the differences that I see on an ongoing basis. I also think that there is a compassion and an empathy that I believe that we as women bring to the table. Not that men don't, but I just think that we see it differently, because in the nonprofit world, particularly the kind of work that the Urban League does, education, jobs, housing, and health, predominantly the families are led by women.
Statistically speaking, according to the Chronicle of Philanthropy, about 2/3 of the people who are employed by not-for-profits such as yours tend to be female, and only about 1/3 are male. Is that mm-hmm. true in the organization that you lead?
Definitely. We are. It's actually a running joke when I hire a man at my board meetings. They're like, oh, there are men out there. I think that does influence some of the ways that we engage as an organization. And even in looking at other affiliates around the United States, other Urban League affiliates, as well as other nonprofits locally, I would say that that statistics definitely proved to be true.
How is the way that you lead a group of predominantly women different mm-hmm. maybe from organizations that you've been in where there have been male leaders?
Before becoming chief executive officer, I would attend Urban League regional or national meetings. And when I would walk into the room, so that's near 20 years ago, when I would walk into the room, it was really obvious there were a handful of women in leadership roles at the Urban League. Now, clearly that has changed a lot in the last 10 years, and thankful for that for me personally, because it's definitely created some new opportunities. The fact that there are more women in the room, I would say that my observations is that it is less competitive. I don't find in my own leadership that I'm trying to compete against other women. I'm just trying to compete against other entities, whatever that might, you know, look like. I actually have found in my tenure as CEO, so finding coaches, mentors, individuals who are willing to support me, that the women have actually stepped up in really great ways, giving me access, giving me feedback, giving me opportunities to really put forth, you know, whatever my skill sets are. So I find it to be a lot more embracing, and I'm prayerful that I'm actually doing that also for other women.
Do you find in your own experience or in the other experiences that you observe that you or other people manage women differently from the way you manage men?
I have to admit that I do think I manage women differently. I want to hope that I manage people based on how they present themselves, but male, female, younger, older. But I think, have a tendency to be, very honestly, a lot more plain spoken with women regarding, I don't really call it a balance. I really don't know what work-life balance is. I call it a dance. You know, some days, you know, it's a two-step. Other days, it might, you know, be, you know, a faster pace. I try to really give women advice around how to create, particularly for those who have families, how to create an environment that can work for them. When I applied for the position of CEO of Urban League, my brother actually had this conversation with me because I was a little concerned, holding myself back. You know, if I applied for this position, you know, I do want to have more children. You know, will I be able to? You know, this job is going to take a lot of time. And he said to me something that always stuck with me. He says, the higher you go, Jermaine, the more flexibility you have. So I think if as women we really begin to embrace that, we not only control it for ourselves, but we actually lay a platform for other women to be able to cross too.
The Miami Herald's Jane Wooldridge speaking with Dr. Jermaine Smith-Bau, President and CEO of the Urban League of Broward County, and earlier Carnival Cruise Line President Christine Duffy. Still to come on our program, a top South Florida technology CEO on the pressures of motherhood and managing a growing company.
I call it the mommy tsunami, and it comes about a few times a year.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. A lot of attention has been paid to fostering the burgeoning technology industry here in South Florida. It's still a small impact right now on the regional workforce, but the effort to diversify employment opportunities away from the traditional sources in hospitality and real estate has been applauded. The sector is a high-profile effort to start and attract companies here in our region. Nationally, women make up only about a quarter of the tech industry workforce, even though more women now enroll in college than men. And women in Western countries use the internet more than men do, 17% more. We continue our conversations with business leaders about gender. Here's the Miami Herald's Karen Rundlett.
As a journalist, I've spoken with several female business leaders over the years, and depending on the woman, the topic of gender might not even come up. There is a diversity of opinion on the subject. Are these leaders who happen to be women or women leaders? Is it better or harder to be one or the other? Last week, I spoke with CEO Joanna Schwartz, who runs a company called Early Shares. Early Shares is an online funding platform for accredited investors.
We moved to commercial real estate primarily for a few reasons. One, because it's my passion and I love it, and a lot of my team members and I have a lot of experience in the industry. But two, and more importantly, as we started to really understand the online investment market, which is a new way of investing that was enabled by the Jobs Act only in 2012 and implemented in 2013, private investing moving online is very new. And commercial real estate as a sector is a perfect sector that is for online investing because it's an asset class that people are interested in and it's an asset class that people understand.
Now, Schwartz is a rare find in South Florida. She's a woman running a for-profit technology and finance company. And this week is actually pretty big for Schwartz and her Early Shares team. The company's going live this week with their next big thing.
We're extremely excited that we're going to be launching our new platform called Property.com. Property.com is a completely open marketplace. Think of it as like the Kayak for commercial real estate investing. We're aggregating property, commercial property sale listings from all over the web, including investment opportunities and purchase opportunities.
After she gave me a tour of the new website, as promised, we honed in on the issue of female leadership. Our conversation was surprisingly personal.
I think one interesting thing that's often overlooked is that in many cases, I really do view being a woman as a strong benefit. And as much as when I go into the room, there are not enough women, and I wish there were more, being a woman in that environment helps you stand out and helps you be memorable. So when you go to a conference and there's a sea of men all dressed in khakis and polos, they remember that I was there. They remember who I was. And I think that is a distinct benefit in business and building relationships going forward.
Now, you've worked in both the finance and tech industries. Neither are really known for being particularly supportive of women in leadership roles. So how did you navigate your career in those industries?
I don't really spend a huge amount of time thinking I'm a woman and that I'm doing this. I think everyone and every professional, man or woman, has their own unique road and their own unique challenges. I think I've always just followed what I've loved, and I do believe that if you love what you do, you will tend to be much better at it, and you will have much more energy to put towards it.
Are you offended that I would come to you then asking about female leadership?
No, not at all, and there are certainly real distinctions. I definitely go to conferences, and I always look around the room and take a mental assessment of how many women are in the room, and every now and then, I'm pleasantly surprised that there's a nice proportion of us in the room, but more often than not, there are many fewer women in the room than I think should be there.
And why do you think that happens?
I think it's sector related. It is society related. I would like to see it change. I do think women face unique challenges.
Like what?
Go there.
Okay. Well, listen, it's no secret that women have more challenges raising capital than men. That's just in the numbers. That's not my perception. That's actually based on numbers. So I'm in a startup business, and we've had to raise our own capital to support our growth. We've raised several million dollars, and that's something that's hard no matter who you are, a man or a woman, and it's also dependent on what kind of a business you have.
It's less than 7% of VC funding that goes to women. That's research from Harvard Business School.
I think it is uniquely challenging for women.
Are there particular strategies or decisions you think women need to make to be more successful in tech careers? Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg told us all to lean in. What do you think?
And listen, I've read all the books, and I think there's a lot of truth to what she says. I think for me, it started very early when I picked my husband, or he picked me, or we picked each other. He knew what kind of woman I was. He knew that I was a motivated, professional woman, and that I wanted to have a very long-term and hopefully successful career. He's incredibly supportive of that, and we've set up our lives to support that. And so we are truly a dual parent family. We have two amazing daughters. We co-parent in the truest sense, and that without that, I think doing something like I'm doing would be virtually impossible.
How do you believe companies can support women in their pursuit of leadership positions?
I think in general, companies at a big level are doing more on a day-to-day basis, but there's more. So there's obviously mentorship that could occur within companies with senior level women and women coming up the fold. But I also truly believe, especially in this mobile technological era that we're in, that our concept of work and life, it's so merged, right? So we work when we're home, our lives are merged together. And I think the real challenges that working women in particular have is when they're trying to balance the not being in two places at once, where the kids need time at school or they need to go to the doctor and they're stuck chained to their desk. And I think companies and people understanding that these two areas of life do not need to be separate, that they're really interconnected. And to the extent that you support the family life, you're also supporting someone being a terrific employee. And this goes for men and women, by the way, that is what really leads to success.
Okay, can you point to any instance in your life where you feel it is tougher to be a woman?
This is much harder because I'm the woman, or because I'm the mom, even with a great partner. I call it the mommy tsunami. And it comes about a few times a year, usually at the beginning of the school year or the end of the school year, when there's some transition in the troop movements of our household. And you just kind of want to say, like, this, you know, every now and then you say, this is insane. And I can't, and you know, you say, what the heck am I doing? But it has happened enough times, and you get through it, and it doesn't last that long. And so when it happens, I recognize, I'm like, okay, I'm in a mommy tsunami. I take a deep breath, and I look at my calendar, and I say it's going to last for the next 2 or 3 weeks, and I just power through it. And somehow we all always get through the other side. And I talk to a lot of moms who have similar positions than I do, and we all relate to that very much. I think that is something unique that most of the men I know don't have that similar type experience.
Final question. What do you think you have to give up to be a CEO?
That's great. That's actually a great answer. Can I just say it like that? The quick answer is sleep. I don't sleep. And that's not so much that I don't spend enough hours actually trying to sleep, but my brain is certainly overly occupied.
That was her assistant chiming in on my conversation with CEO of Early Shares, Joanna Schwartz. She helped her along with that sleep answer. Early Shares launches property.com this week. For the Sunshine Economy, from the Miami Herald Newsroom, I'm Karen Blundlett.
Still to come on our program, businesswomen who rock.
I'm not good with conformity, so it makes it easier, I guess, to go from one milestone to the next or one risk to the next, knowing that you, okay, I survived the first one. Let's do this, you know?
Walking into Chef Adrian's Vineyard Restaurant and Wine Bar means leaving behind the blazing South Florida sunshine. The shades were pulled down tight. It was a late lunch hour on a recent Tuesday when I met Chef Adrian at the corner booth in her small restaurant. This is Women in Business in the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. With a menu featuring New Zealand lamb, Alaskan salmon with brown sugar crust garlic and sweet chili aioli, and wild corvina with Sicilian pistachio and truffle butter, you might think the restaurant would be right at home on Collins Avenue, Las Olas, or in Brickell. And it would. But instead, she's built her business and reputation through two cookbooks and surviving the Great Recession in a male-dominated field of leading her own kitchen, owning her own business. Adrian Calvo opened that business, a restaurant, in West Kendall 8 years ago this month, not far from where she grew up. She was 16 years old when she experienced what she called a lightning strike about wanting to be in the culinary arts.
Your passion can be your paycheck type of thing, you know. That's what it became, and I realized that every day of my life I just wanted to be cooking.
She is cooking, and she's now the sole owner of that restaurant with its 60 seats and 16 full-time employees. She remembers the difficulty of surviving the early culinary education and the competitions that came and won.
In my culinary class, for 30 people, there was probably 3 girls out of it. And out of the 3 girls, 2 would drop out. So that used to really, because this is a strenuous field. If you're really a chef, you're lifting 50-pound pots or carrying trays that are 80-something pounds, you know. So it's not an easy thing, and they're long hours, so it's demanding for a family and whatnot. But when I started competing, and my competitors or my colleagues in the classroom there, let's say there was 10 of us that were competing and 9 of those were men, they would tell me, like, little girl, get out of the kitchen, what are you doing, you don't belong here, you're not really going to place, you're not going to win, what are you doing, you know. They would hide my pots, things like that. It was really the good old boys club. I was just like, okay, you know, let's let them have their little smirk and let them, they must be intimidated if they're behaving that way. So I would just keep quiet and out focused and do my thing, and then when I would win, I'd just high-five them and go, good job, boys. That was it.
She kept winning and started writing. She's written 2 cookbooks, Maximum Flavor Social in 2014. Her second book, Playing with Fire, was published earlier this year.
I'm not a feminist 100% because I do know, like I said, this career does, it is very, it's demanding and it's competitive and it's all of the above. So generally, not all women are trying to not have their nails done, have their hair picked up all the time, wearing clogs, being greasy, you know, things like that. It really does take a special kind of woman to do it. But nonetheless, once you're in it, you're just as good or better as any man. So I'm not good with conformity, so it makes it easier just because I've been able, thankfully, to, I mean, through a lot of hard work and hours and dedication. And I mean, if you see, my arms are full of burns because I actually am one of those chefs that really work. It makes it easier, I guess, to go from one milestone to the next or one risk to the next, knowing that you, okay, I survived the first one. Let's do this, you know.
The forearms are full of burns, and then there's a tattoo there on your left bicep. What's that say?
It says, make it count.
And it's attributed to somebody, right?
Yes. It's attributed to my sister, Jenny. She passed away to cancer, and she used to say every day, make it count. And that's what I do every day. So.
It was tongue cancer that claimed her sister at 19. Chef Adrian was just 21 at the time. She said the lesson was, tomorrow is not guaranteed.
You have to imagine that all 21-year-olds, what are they thinking? I'm partying it up, I'm going to drink, I'm going to, you know, I never had that. What I had in front of me was losing, like, the closest person to me, and I saw her suffer through the whole thing. And I think, in general, people think they have time. They believe I'll do it next year. I'm still young enough. I can do this. And that was stripped away from me through that experience. So that helps me to get things done. you know how they say last chances come with no warnings, you know, and that's how it was for me. So I learned, essentially, I just learned to make it count because tomorrow is not guaranteed. So for the life that I want and the legacy that I would like to leave, I'm not trying to be like, okay, I'll just chill because maybe in the next 10 years I'll accomplish something. And someday when I have kids, I want them to be able to say, hey, my mom did this, you know, and leave them something worth talking about.
She doesn't think it's confidence that led her to start her own restaurant when she was in her early 20s. She says it was the fear of not taking a risk. It takes guts to strike a chord on your own, whether you're a man or a woman. This summer, a new camp comes to Miami, aiming to help young women find their voice through music. WLRN intern Jeanette Reyes reports.
Emily Milgram is on the drums with her band Quarter Horses. She has a record label called Other Electricities. She's also managing partner of Sweat Records, the record store in Miami. And she's co-founder of Miami Girls Rock Camp. It's part of the Girls Rock Camp Alliance. The first camp was founded in Portland, Oregon 14 years ago. Milgram says kids are too young to get into a lot of local rock venues, and finally having the camp here will make local musicians more accessible to girls.
At that impressionable age, it's just so important for them to see that there are other women who can do this and do this, and that way they can learn about it and find out if they want to do it.
Milgram thinks having a rock camp just for girls is important because of what female musicians have to go through in the rock world.
I've even heard stories of a left-handed drummer setting up her drum kit left-handed, and, you know, she goes to get something to eat and she comes back and the sound guy had reset it up right-handed and said, "Oh, sweetie, you set it up wrong." You know, it happens in many different ways. I mean, a sound guy doing that, that's ridiculous. You know, the sound guy should be communicating with the band and asking them where they need mics and what they need on the stage, not resetting something up because he thinks a female drummer didn't know how to set up her own drum kit.
Several bands with female members recently played a benefit for the camp at Churchill's Pub.
I feel like sometimes getting booked for shows is a little challenging.
Autumn Casey is a guitarist for the band Snakehole. Casey was at the benefit and says shows with female musicians tend to be labeled differently.
There's always a lot of these girl nights for girl bands to play, when I feel like that is something that could be improved as far as integration with the whole scene. It doesn't have to be so isolated.
Snakehole's drummer Casey Toymill is applying to volunteer at the camp. Toymill says as a female rock musician, she's had trouble offstage too, and hopes the girls learn not to let these things bother them.
Sometimes there's weird tension. Sometimes I'm at Guitar Center and I work there, and the customer will be like, "Wait, you're working in guitars?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I am." And he's like, "And you're a girl?" And I'm like, "Yes, can I help you?"
Stuff like this is why Emily Milgram wanted to bring Girls Rock Camp to Miami.
For a woman to be respected on stage or as a musician, she has to get up there and prove herself. A guy's already there. "Oh, yeah, dude, you play guitar? Oh, yeah, you play drums? That's awesome. That's great." But for a girl, it's like, "Oh, wow, she's really good for a girl. Oh, she's a great player for a girl." And it's weird because no one's saying, "Oh, he's a great player for a guy." That never happens.
Didi Aragon is a guitarist in Hayoshi Waves and wants to volunteer at the camp. She wants to see the girls come out with the confidence she didn't have early on.
Maybe they're not going to be virtuosos from learning from me, but they're definitely going to feel like they can get on there and just do it, get that shyness out, and just start picking up an instrument. I definitely didn't have that as a kid.
You always get put on the back burner, or you think you have to be comparing to someone else.
Sofia Fuentes is a solo musician and another potential camp volunteer. She also wants to make sure the girls learn some lessons beyond music.
Just be happy with the person that you're born with and the skills that you have and just shine. Because that's personally something I went through a lot. Not knowing, like, is this okay? Am I supposed to be doing this? If I would have had, like, someone pushing me all that time, I would have been, like, 20 million times better.
Miami Girls Rock Camp starts this summer. It'll be a week-long experience for girls ages 8 to 17. I'm Jeanette Reyes in Miami.
Still to come on our program, brother and sister on running a company their mother built.
If you're smart, people are going to know it, regardless of whether you're wearing a suit, a skirt. You know, it doesn't make a difference.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy, talking about women in business in the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. You can join the discussion online on Twitter, at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Zuby Advertising has a blue-chip list of clients it works with, Ford Motor Company, Smucker's, and Dunkin' Donuts. The company was started by a woman, Terry Zuby Zaretta, back in 1976. She passed away in 2007, and the company she began has since grown into a firm booking $100 million of advertising. It's now led by a man and a woman, a brother and sister, her daughter Michelle and son Joe.
She was known as Mama Zuby, and everybody in her organization was part of her family. She used to always say, "You don't work for me, you work with me."
I think I learned a lot of diplomacy from her and how to get your way. I think that that's one of the things that she really perfected that.
The first client that she approached was when the Miami Herald was opening their section, El Nuevo Herald, and she walked into the meeting saying, "I am your target. I am a 30-some-odd-year-old Hispanic female that makes most of the purchase decisions of our household, and if you want to reach me, you should use me to help you advertise this new section." So she turned the negative into an advantage by saying, "We are a growing minority and women are making most of the purchase decisions. So who better to help you through that maze than Hispanic women of the age that you're trying to reach?" And that was the start of the agency, was just a small group of ladies. They used to call them Zuby's Angels, that for many, many years, there was no men working in Zuby Advertising.
I used to hang out with Mom all the time. So I was always with the Zuby Angels. And so I always say that I actually got on the payroll in 1990, but I had been working with her for a long time before that. So these women really shaped my life. And then I studied psychology, and I met some pretty incredible women in that field as well. So I always knew that I would eventually work my way back to advertising. I just kind of had to veer out for myself for a little while. Since my brother had studied it and my mom was in it, it was kind of expected. And so I veered off, and then I came back home. But definitely spending as much time as I did with my mom and all of her female, you know, employees was a very, very, like, life lesson for me. It changed perspective, where a lot of my friends had, you know, their moms wouldn't work or they were at home or whatever. I had a different upbringing. I didn't go home after school. I went to the office.
I will tell you that the females that I've worked with in on the client side generally tend to not be threatened by having smart people around them and empowering them to make decisions, whereas sometimes males tend to be very protective of their information and their turf and, you know, possessive of power so that they can move along, you know, faster or get things done. So I know that that's a big generalization, but I do see that women tend to have better ability to get support groups around them that, before you know it, they're doing a lot of the work for you.
And I think it goes back to what Joe was saying in terms of the leadership styles, and that is there's a subtlety to sometimes, and again, generalization, but the way that women lead. And it's a little more subtle. It's a little less bull in a china shop. And so that subtlety makes people want to kind of like group around you all for a common cause because they all believe in it. And sometimes, again, a big generalization, bull in a china shop doesn't really work that way. It's kind of like, this is my way and let's go. And you never really got buy-in from the people that you need on your team.
Well, I mean, what you just mentioned about women leaders sort of kind of relating better to other women who work under them. But there can also be a cattiness to that in some cases. Like, you know, like, did you see what she was wearing today? Oh my God, how could she, you know, there's men, you're never going to get that. It's like, guys are going to work together and they'll be, you know, there's become some confrontations. They'll be head on and they'll last about 5 minutes and then they'll go back and it'll be over. Whereas sometimes with women, at least what I've seen, is those confrontations could lead to long-term distances between them in some cases where they won't speak for, you know, days or weeks because of something that happened. Whereas guys, it's like, all right, forget it. It's over. Let's move on.
You know, he brings up a good point, and that is, and this is all a lot of generalization, but you know, the men are a little more reactive. And so when they explode, it's what Joe was saying. And I've seen it happen a million times in the agency. And some people, when they experience it for the first time, kind of really freak out. And I'm like, okay, just forget it. This is standard operating procedure. Where Joe and somebody else, you know, one of our partners, will go at it. And it gets pretty heated. And then 5 minutes later, it's done. And they both go away. And then they come back and they're like, hey, dude, what's up? Okay, let's go. And, you know, how about this strategy or this? Whereas with women, what I've seen, and even myself, the blow up lingers a little bit longer. And then there may have to be like a follow up conversation to that blow up. I think one of the biggest things that I would say is don't have a chip on your shoulder.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. This is not about whether I'm a female and he's a male. And this is about intelligence, authenticity, what you know, how much you know. Definitely know what you don't know, because that's a big area where sometimes, you know, but it's not a competition. If you're in it for the same goal, then what I bring to the table is just as valuable as what Joe brings to the table. And there are a million times when I defer to Joe, not because he's a male, but because he knows that part better than me. And then he'll defer to me on other things. And so it's, you know what, just be yourself. If you're smart, people are going to know it, regardless of whether you're wearing a suit, a skirt. You know, it doesn't make a difference.
And the only thing I would add to that is don't be afraid to be feminine. I mean, you are a woman, and you don't have to, you know, being in a man's world or whatever you want to call it, you can be smart and respected and still, you know, be feminine. You don't have to be so hard and try to, you know, be the this untouchable or unapproachable person, because there's something very beautiful about, you know, being a woman in business. And when you see somebody who's very smart and attractive, or at least dresses well, takes care of herself, you know, you respect that, because you know how hard it is to do all that. And still, well, you probably have a family, you have kids at home, pick them up at school, whatever the case is, you're getting all that done. And yet you still walk into the office every day looking good and feeling good. And that makes a big impression on people. Advertising for many, many years, Mad Men was mostly a male-driven organization. And even today, most of the presidents and chairmen and chief creative officers at agencies in New York are men. So there's a woman that is the chief creative officer at Leo Burnett in Chicago. She's terrific. We know her because of our mutual friendships up there. She'll tell you how hard it has been for her to get the respect creatively of men going up and through the ranks to where she got. So I'm sure that there are other industries, you know, fashion and other retail industries, where you may not see as much of a
disparity,
but, you know, in advertising, in the tech sector right now, in automotive, I mean, Mary Wells be the first CEO of GM. That was huge. And when did they put her there? The minute GM was in trouble with all the, you know, backlash and public relations issues they were having, they put a woman up there to take the heat in front of the Senate. I think that in our market, the Hispanic market, we are not as advanced, if you will, as the mainstream in terms of the man stepping up. We have a client at one of our clients, I won't mention the name, but she had to take a trip. They were shooting some commercials in Madrid, and from there she had to go to Taiwan, and she was gone for 3 weeks. And her husband is a police officer, and he managed young children. I'm talking like preteen kids the whole time she was gone. He was, you know, dad. In the Hispanic market, there tends to be a little more expectation of the woman that, look, you're working, but, you know, I still expect to have dinner at night. I still expect, you know, that the kids be clean and groomed, and I'll pitch in, but, you know, I've got my own things that I have to do. So there's still a little bit of that machismo. It's changing, because Hispanic men are realizing that, you know, they just can't expect a woman to do all that. But I don't think we are as far along as mainstream America in terms of what father has to do to participate in the household.
And I think that will change, and it has changed, to Joe's point, just from generation to generation. Yeah. You know, the more that everybody lives in this world that, you know, that we all live in now, in terms of dual income and two people working, the more that life just has to change that way. And so those machismos start, you know, declining a little bit. And the woman, quite frankly, starts feeling less bad, if that's the correct way of saying it, for actually not being at home or not having dinner ready. That's one of the things that we found a lot when we've done, you know, our research, is that it's not just the man that's pushing for this in our market. Mm-hmm. It's also the woman who, because they saw their mom or their grandmother act a certain way and sort of that was passed down to them, they start getting like a little bit of a complex and they get a guilty conscience that they're not performing the duties, quote unquote, that they had seen their mom and their grandmother perform. So that starts leveling out from generation to generation. And so I think it's on the decline, but it's still there.
The sister and brother team of Michelle and Joe Zubizarreta, leaders of Zubi Advertising. Their conversation was led by Jane Wooldridge of the Miami Herald. Still to come, investing in and by women. We're back on the Sunshine Economy talking about women in business in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. It's often pointed out that South Florida's economy lacks lots of big businesses. Sure, there's big corporations here like American Airlines, the cruise ships, of course, health systems. But as a major metropolitan area, Miami lacks a long list of corporate headquarters of big national or multinational firms. Those are the types of companies that traditionally have significant financial resources to invest in training and then result in spin-out companies. Instead, it's small and medium-sized businesses making up the bulk of economic opportunities here. For women leaders in business, research shows that that usually means they have started the companies they lead. The Commonwealth Institute of South Florida surveyed a few hundred women-led businesses in the Sunshine State, and they're an optimistic bunch. 3 out of 4 expect their revenues to grow at least moderately this year, fueling new hiring. More than half plan to add jobs.
The surge in women's entrepreneurship could very well make or break a struggling economy.
Lori K. Davis is the executive director of the Commonwealth Institute of South Florida.
I hope to see and continue to see a little bit more of a level playing field. We are doing supposedly a little bit better than the rest of the United States in the wage gap. We should be there by 2038 versus 2050, which, quite frankly, we should be there right now.
She's referring to a separate study from the Institute for Women's Policy Research. That study found Florida ranked 37th among the 50 states for employment and earnings for women. The median income for Florida women, $34,000. Females make up 37% of professional and managerial jobs. That earned Florida a D+ for the status of its women.
As you think back in your professional career, how has the environment for women in the workplace changed?
Well, the conversations are there that maybe they were in the 70s and then they stalled. They just stopped. There weren't the conversations. And I think that they're back again. A friend of mine shared a story. She's an anthropologist in a very large global marketing company. They had a top management and there were six people in the room. One of them was a woman. And she started talking a little bit, sharing with these guys. They're like, well, how's it going? And she shared and some of the things she shared, they were just, wow, we had no idea this was happening for you. And so, I think that the door is open for conversations or maybe educating men that here's what's happening. Here's how women are feeling. That it's happening.
And how is that?
Well, it might be, and it's not simple, but it's something, just some sort of educational conversation on this is what's happening and maybe here's what we could do about it.
What's the message to the community, do you think?
Together, regardless of whether you're a man or a woman, together, we lead differently. But together, with collaboration and creativity and a different kind of conversation, our businesses can thrive, our communities can thrive, our world can thrive.
The Commonwealth Institute survey asked women business leaders what makes it difficult for them in Florida to get ahead. 1 out of 3 had a common answer: family obligations.
For Laurie K. Davis of the Commonwealth Institute, it's a challenge she has personally experienced, re-entering the workforce after raising her daughter.
I sat down with my husband, and so I had a list of the things that I did, and I sat down with him, and I said, well, I'm not expecting that you're going to take half of these. Quite frankly, I do more than half better than he does, but that being said, I asked him to take a look, and that I was not going to be able to do all of these any longer for the house, and that he needed to pick some of them.
She says he chose to handle the recycling, take out the trash, and do the dishes. They split the responsibilities to feed their pets. He takes care of the nighttime feedings. You've been listening to The Sunshine Economy, Women in Business in the Sunshine Economy. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.